Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. So yes, welcome to a very special auspicious day in the Good Listening To Show clearing. This is Irish actor Turla Convery, and unbeknownst to me, I had a legend on the tennis courts of Windmill Hill. We played tennis together. So very welcome. You are a legend, because as soon as I started researching you, after you said, yes, I've just returned, it's Resident Evil is the thing you've been working on of late. Is that right?
That was a little bit ago. The thing you'd see me currently, standing around in is House of Dragons.
I love your accent. Standing around, it was absolutely gorgeous. So you're an Irish actor. I know you know who you are, but just to blow a bit of happy smoke at you, you played the character Bear in three series of Killing Eve. You were very, very famously Arthur Parker in Sanderton, where you trailblazed with the gay romance based on Jane Austen's final novel. So, yes, you're a trailblazer and a pioneer, and I love the fact you've been in House of Dragons. How fantastic. Tickety-boo. So you're very welcome. How's morale? And obviously you're speaking from Bristol as well. So you're from Ireland originally. Oh, yes, you're also, you played a wonderful fire and brimstone preacher in Belfast as well.
That was the first job I shot post-pandemic. So it was shot in August of 2020. So we'd come out of lockdown and we were in that tier system. And it was certainly back at it. There was no easing back in. It was a two-page monologue in front of Kenneth Branagh and Judi Dench and all these ones. So it was like, okay, well, here we go.
I've recently had Brendan O'Hay on the show, who co-authored Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent, with Dame Judi Dench. So we have her in common too.
Oh, well.
And sorry, just connections with Dame Judi Dench. I've also had Finty Williams in me clearing as well. You are very, very welcome. I'm really, really thrilled and happy. Thank you for saying yes. I'm going to curate you through the journey of the show. We're going to have a clearing, a tree, a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There'll be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. So first of all, a bit of a googly question. How's morale and what's your story of the day, please, Turla?
Morale is very good. My story of the day has been that it's a nice relaxing day. I went out for a lovely walk in one of my favourite places in the world, Lee Woods. And for a gorgeous walk this morning, I've done some bit of artistic creative stuff that I was needing to work on. And then this evening, one of our very good friends is graduating from her PhD from the University of Bristol. So we're going to go celebrate our good friend.
And here in Bristol, it is a glorious, glorious sunny day. And are you in Windmill Hill? I didn't ask you where you live. Not that I'm going to come around your house, but
so I live in Totterdown. I live essentially close, a bit closer to the station.
I love how you say Totterdown as opposed to Totterdown, which is how obviously how in Bristol we say it. It took me about 10 years of living in Bristol to actually nail the accent, and what eventually nailed it was we're going to go get a burger and that sort of stuff.
That's very good. Yeah, I go to West Country if I end up doing it. Yeah. So
yes. So, delight to have you. So, let's get you on the open road then on the structure of the show. So, Turla Convery, a wonderful Irish actor. Where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think? Where's your favourite place?
Okay, so my favourite place is, hilariously, it is the woods. It doesn't really matter what wood, as long as there is beautiful trees, there is a bit of dappled sunlight coming through some leaves. That is where I go to in my head whenever I want to relax and whenever I want to get into an imaginative space. But it's also where I physically go whenever I'm feeling a little bit low and feeling a little bit like I need to get back in touch with myself. And I think there's something very important about woods to me. I think it's the fact that these big, old, solid bits of wood have been here before you and will be here after you. And it means you kind of are able to put things into perspective a bit. If you're going for a walk in the woods, you're like, these trees don't give a crap about what's going on with my day. And also, whenever I'm in a good mood, there's nothing better than going and, you know, I'm giving my partner's not the biggest fan of it. Well, she is, but I like to give trees like a big slap.
Rather than a bear hug.
I like to go up and give them a big tap and see how solid they are. So you give them a nice big slap, and you feel how solid that wood is, and it helps remind you of the roots that are deep down below it, keeping it all together.
And I'm assuming that's not how you met your childhood sweetheart, Francesca. You didn't go give her a big slap.
No. We met at drama school,
which was Guildhall, wasn't it? In your case,
it's one of those funny ones. It was Guildford School of Acting. Many people allow the mistake to happen whenever they say Guildhall. But I like to correct it.
I love your clearing, complete with dappled sunlight. So very, very sort of sodden. Time into the woods with Turlaconbury. I'm not trying to make it all lovey, but I love the fact actually that there's history and there's perspective. And of all the circa 200 episodes I've done, nobody has specifically said a wood. So I love the fact that everyone always interprets that question differently. So we're in the clearing then, beautiful. And you said it. What I loved about it, it's a generic everyman woods. It's not a specific. It's not Lee Woods where you were this morning. It's just the woods.
Yeah, it's just the woods. It's. Where there is trees and where there is light and where there is moss, that's where.
And I love that because obviously wherever there is a gap, that is a clearing. And I think of my clearing being energetically a bit sort of, you know, Midsummer Night's Dreamy. It's in the middle of a place like a woods. This is wonderful. Okay, so now I'm going to arrive with a tree. You've already got loads, but there we go. This is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque and a bit deliberately existential. I'm now going to shake your tree to see which apples fall out. And then this is where you've been kind enough, and thank you for thinking about this beforehand. You've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, Turla, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention, and that's where the, squirrels will come in, and then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you. It's not a memory test, so I'll curate you through it. So interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit.
Mm-hmm. So it will mostly be, I think... The first thing that inspired me is my grandma on my mum's side. Both my parents worked, had to work whenever we were growing up. And my grandma ended up essentially taking care of us and looking after us and doing all of the runs to school and doing all the cooking. And she then lived with us from ages seven, whenever I was seven, onwards till the end of her life. But that was all the way through. She passed away in 2021. But grandma was a huge influence on me. I had a very tough time whenever I was about 10 or 11. It was whenever I was just finishing primary school and lots of stressors. We had this thing in Northern Ireland, which you had over here, but they banned it in the rest of the UK because they realized that it was a slightly failed test. But it was the 11 plus. It was that was the thing. And I took it just because my birthday landed in March. I was 10 when I took the 11 plus. And I think one of the many sort of things which made it not quite work as a test was that. But that was a certain time in my life where I was really struggling. And I developed ulcers in my stomach. I was off school quite a bit. And so grandma would look after me, but she would look after me in the kind of perfect way that you imagine, where it would be like, I don't really care how sick you are because we've got chores to do. So if you're at home, you're going to do these chores. So you're going to get this done. We're going to get that done. And we'd always watch, we always watch Diagnosis Murder and Murder, She Wrote. back at about 2 o'clock on ITV or whatever.
And Angela Lansbury brought you up as well.
Angela Lansbury, exactly. Angela Lansbury and I've forgotten his name, but the very Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, two wonderful mentors alongside your grandma.
Wonderful mentors, but that was always a moment where you know, she silently understood that there was a reason why I was going, not why I was struggling in school, was not just because I was sick. I was sick because of this thing.
Yes.
So she was able to go, well, if you're here, then you can see how you can be productive in the house, and you can see how you can make happiness around you in this space that you call home. And I mean, now, I have no better days than whenever I'm pootling around the house, you know, doing a bit of cleaning, doing a bit of that, you know, taking the dog for a walk, coming back, cooking, all that stuff. Those are my happiest days. So it kind of, in a weird way, it prepped me for the freelance life of acting quite well. Now, you know, talk to many of my friends and they'll say I'm not prepared for it at all because I'm a nightmare whenever I'm doing something of major interest. But, you know, it prepared me to be okay being in the house and doing bits and bobs.
I love the grandma healing whispering of just keeping busy, but healing you through purpose.
Yeah, healing through purpose and healing, and through that small purpose, that purpose of saying, if you do this, then you'll be able to get the house together. You'll be able to make these certain things. And she was a very, very influential woman on all of us. But she was also a wonderful, wonderful sort of stoic woman from the countryside in Belfast, in Northern Ireland. She was brought up in Fermanagh, in a tiny, tiny little, farmhouse with, was 8, 9, maybe 10 brothers and sisters, but moved over, as so many people did, moved to Croydon in the '50s to become a midwife. And so she was over there, and yeah, just the strength. It also meant whenever I decided to move, there was a sort of a slight lineage and understanding of like, well, you're not going too far because we've been there before, you know?
Yes.
So that would be sort of the first major influence on me.
So was that part of your childhood when she'd moved away, or are you talking about you having grown up in Croydon then?
No. So I grew up in Belfast, but whenever she was younger, she moved in the 1950s to Croydon. With my granddad, and he was a construction worker, and built a number of the houses in Croydon. And my grandma was a midwife. My mum lived in Croydon for a while.
So almost part of the McGee clan. You know, there's a big building construction company in London called McGee.
Exactly. Yeah. Probably the second sort of influence on me would be, and it does sound a bit kind of silly, but it would be the writing of Stephen Sondheim, who you did mention earlier on. So I studied musical theatre at Guildford School of Acting, and it was only through one day whenever I was about 15, 16, I'd done a couple of musicals, I was kind of enjoying them, I stumbled across the Proms Stephen Sondheim night, where they were doing some Sweeney Todd. And my little brain was blown away by this. I didn't understand how this could be musical theatre and how this could be the thing that I really love doing. And that was mad. I was like, there's something here. There's something here. And so then my love for musicals really, really grew. And that's the next sort of massively influential thing. I discovered this thing that I was able to do, that I was able to do really well. And
did you know you could sing hitherto, or was this a
So I sung a lot. I sung a lot of Irish folk tunes. I sung in competitions. I sung in that sort of style. But whenever I was at one of my secondary schools, Rockport, they were doing a musical and they were like, you should audition for it. It's a smaller school. So they're like, come on, everyone's having a go. And I did it. And I found people applauding me, and it was really nice. I'm not an academic person. And so it was the first time musicals, and the first musical was Guys and Dolls, but musicals and then Stephen Sondheim was the first time where I was like, oh, I can do this thing. I can do this thing that people are valuing.
And I'm imagining you're a baritone or a bass just listening to your voice now.
I'm a high baritone, actually. I used to be, when I was younger, a bit more of a tenor. But time and time in memoriam has brought me lower down. but so that would be the second thing, musicals and the genre of musicals, and seeing that there was an outlet for my creativity that I had not discovered yet.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
The third would be a teacher at GSA. And it's an acting teacher, and all round wonderful man. And he's worked at GSA for probably about 40 years. He's a guy called Ian Ricketts.
Ian Ricketts, yeah.
And he is one of the most wonderful and thoughtful and intelligent men I've ever met. He has a warmth and a compassion about him that allowed you to express yourself and not be afraid. And again, I can't tell you all about it, because if he's still there, I think he's still there, and I think he's still doing it. But there is a thing that happens in first year, which is called the Woodland Walk. And anyone who has been through GSA has been on this Woodland Walk, and it is done by him. And you can't talk too much about it. It's like a Fight Club, but in a nightclub. But his understanding and his connection to how nature influences you as a person, and how it influences your acting, and how you can get solace from this thing.
The beauty of how that speaks to your own clearing in the woods as well is perfect.
And I think that's one of the many reasons we connected. He actually ended up speaking at mine and Frankie's wedding.
Oh, wow.
We invited him to do one of the readings at our wedding, because he was such a huge influence on both of us. And we went back, and whenever we asked him, he took us on this walk again, but not in the same way, but just took us on this walk and talked to us about who we are and what we want to do in this new chapter of our life that we're beginning. And he's one of the most wonderful men I've had the pleasure to meet. And he's this tiny, tiny, tiny little man. He's the sort of the absolute epitome of what you would imagine Puck in a
Midsummer. Wow. In the woods as well. Wow, yes.
He's a very small, he's in his 80s, and he still chops wood every morning, because he has taken over this large part of woodland at the back of his house.
Oh, he's like a Geppetto carving actors out of the wood. I love that.
So to look after it, to tend to it, to take care of it. And he was one of the first people that allowed me to see the intelligence that I had in myself.
Wow.
Before, I'd never seen that. Before, I'd kind of always gone, oh, I'm not that smart, but I can do these things that entertain people. But he was one of the first people that went, well, look at it this way, and allow yourself to look at it this way, and you might find something in that.
Yes.
And in that process, and in the process of working with him twice a week for the entire 3 years. And yeah, so he's a very wonderful man. And then the fourth most influential thing in my life, thing is not really the right adjective, but the most important and influential person in my life is my partner, Frankie. We've been together for 14 years, all throughout, halfway through first year, and then all throughout the rest of our time in GSA and post that. She is the most interesting person I know. In every way, and has a creative vision and drive and passion that anyone who meets her is floored by. And I had the privilege to be able to stand beside her for as many years as we have and help each other grow. Because that's the biggest thing that we find in our journey together so far, was we were like, this is the thing that we are learning how to grow into the adults and into the humans we are. And it's a privilege to be able to do that with someone. And it's a privilege to be able to do that with someone who you love and respect and is hilarious and, you know, brightens every room that she goes into and makes everyone around her brighter.
Wonderful and beautiful tribute to her, Francesca. Lovely. And now, that's brilliant. That's the four shapage. So now, three things that inspire you. If there's any overlap, don't worry about that. But three things that inspire you, Tella.
Art inspires me a lot. I'm a massive fan of art. I especially love landscapes. So the works, and the first realization of this was, hilariously, was also in Ian Rickett's class. He discussed one of the paintings, which I can't remember the name of it, but it's a very famous painting by Turner, and it is a painting of a steam train going along a track, and the steam train is barely formed, and in front of it is a little rabbit, and it's going over a river. You see a little boat. It's in the National Gallery, but his paintings, Turner's paintings, were kind of amazing to me, because I went and saw them for the first time whenever I got to drama school, and I was beginning to discover myself, and I was also then suddenly discovering this artist who went, here is the mold, here is the conservative mold that landscape should be.
Yes.
You've got the trees, you've got the things, you've got this, but I'm going to put my own stamp on that. I'm going to break that apart. I'm going to make it mist. I'm going to make that wave turn into ghosts coming out of the wave to try and take down the ship. I'm going to make the sun so bright in the center of the piece that it's going to blind the people watching. And all of that, just I was really stunned by that, because I was like, modern art, I've now begun to really understand and love. But whenever I was a bit younger, I found that so abstract from me. I really struggled to understand where that was coming from. But this, I'd seen landscapes, I've seen what a hill looks like. But then how's this person done that with that?
Yes.
That's really interesting. And I think his art turned a little key in me that went, oh, go and have a look at other bits of art. And find a way in there. And yeah, and it unlocked just this amazing feeling inside of me, and art has been very close to me. So it definitely inspires me.
And it makes such sense about how history speaks to you as well, because of your being in lots of period pieces, but also the history of the woods. There's something steeped about legacy and perspective in amongst the wood or the construct of that.
Yeah. I think another thing that inspires me is history. It's funny that you mentioned that. I was thinking about this because it's what I go to whenever I'm wanting to listen to a podcast, or whenever I'm wanting to just watch something that I'm like, oh, I'm just going to dip into this. Pretty much a lot of the time, it's going to be something to do with history. Mm. I'm absolutely fascinated with how cultures were made, with how and again, one of the books, Homo Sapien by Yuval Noah Harari. That was a book that I read about 5, 6, 7 years ago, which was again a big inspirational turn for me, because it speaks about the human history and it speaks about how we've come to this place that we are in now.
Yeah.
And I find that incredibly interesting, you know, coming from a place that is steeped in a huge amount of very, very recent, very, very tough and hard history, and having been part of the peace generation that had to begin reckoning with all that. You know, there's a very, very funny and very accurate scene or episode in Derry Girls where they go to the equivalent of what we call in Northern Ireland the Share Centre, which is a place where you go to do cross community projects whenever you're about 10, 12, 13 years old. And you go in with a bunch of people from the other side. You go in with a bunch of Protestants or a bunch of Catholics, depending on where you're from. And that's a very generalized term, but it's usually just schools now. So it's a different school from a different neighborhood. You go and you do this thing. And it's very funny, in the scene, there's all the differences are all written down and they're this massive, massive list. And then the similarities, there's nothing. And that's the joke, obviously. But that was a real sort of reality. So I think I picked up history very early because it was so present. It wasn't something that was in the past that was forgotten about. It was living. The discussions of the Easter Rising in 1916, the discussions of the proclamation of the Irish Republic, the discussions of who all these people were, it was present. And if I'm ever thinking about any storytelling stuff, it usually tends to be, well, what could we do with the old Irish gods? What could we do with the Ulster cycle? What could we do with the Tanu Dan? What could we do with this? It tends to be something in a historical period setting. Yes. Then my third inspiration is my friends. I have a very, very, very close knit group of friends. They are a big inspiration and a huge influence on me. My best friend, Ollie, is a writer, and he is one of the funniest people that I know, apart from Frank's. He might contest that. But has stayed with me on this long, long journey of life and has taught me so much. And my friendship group, naturally, if you meet in around the early years of drama school, you become extremely close. You're put into extremely intense and hard situations very early on. That you just form a bond. Now it might be a trauma bond, but it's a bond all the same.
We've survived, yes.
But yeah, so my friends would be. My biggest inspiration.
Lovely. You're interpreting this deliciously. Thank you. And now, the two squirrels of distraction. What are your... Oh, squirrels, that's borrowed from the film Up, your monsters of distraction. So what never fails to distract you, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you?
It's so bad, but I love playing video games. I'm a big video gamer. I'm an absolute nut for video games, and I tend to actually, if I'm working on a project and I'm away for a long period of time, I'll actually take my Xbox, other games consoles inserted here,
also available.
I'll usually take my Xbox away with me because it's a really great pressurizer.
Lovely, yeah.
If I've been on a very intense set during the day, if I come back and it's not shoot 'em, I've never really played shoot 'em up games. That's not really my thing. Again, it's kind of, it all begins unraveling at a certain point. One of my favorite games at the minute, it's a strategy game called Crusader Kings 3, and it's a massive essentially map where you play as a vassal or as a knight of a realm, and you have to try and through many various things you have to, and it's all just like prompts. It's like kind of like those old school games of like, you're in the woods, do you want to go forward, yes or no? Yes, you've gone forward. It's kind of like that, but slightly more complicated.
I'm with you. Yes.
And it's wonderful. You can make empires, the Mongols invade, and it is exactly, is that thing of like, I see how it links to my personality and why I get a lot out of it.
So I understand too, yes.
I'm literally playing as the Laird of Munster. This is amazing.
The Laird of Munster. I love that too.
And then probably my second biggest distraction is singing and dancing and listening to music. If there's a great album on, it kind of soundtracks my life. Music. We always have the radio on in our house, but if it's not BBC Radio 6 music, it's usually just a playlist that we have on Spotify, where we'll just go, these are the vibes I want today, and I'll chuck them on, and we discover new music and we listen to it all the time. And we've got it so bad that we've conditioned our dog to not be able to be in silence. The dog listens to the radio at night. We have BBC Radio 4 on for the dog overnight. So we've got a very intelligent dog.
Hopefully. Very cultured dog, absolutely.
Very, very up on the shipping forecast.
Opinions about everything. won't cock its leg up on anything. Very discerning. And what's the track of the moment that you're loving and listening to?
The track of the moment is actually, it's Mary Wallopers. They're an Irish folk rock band. They're doing huge things. They're absolutely amazing. Called The Frost Is Over.
Oh, I might just drop that into the soundtrack if I'm allowed. But
do so. It's absolutely stunning. We saw them on Paddy's Day in the Bristol O2. They've just played at Glastonbury, and they're doing the Green Man Festival this summer. I feel like I'm their PR or something like that. But they're these amazing lads who are doing old school music. And they're doing it with traditional things, but it's just their feeling towards giving a good boot in to the higher ups, and it's really punky. They feel like they sort of have inherited the Pogue tradition.
I was going to say,
they're sort of the next iteration of that.
And say the name again. They're called Mary Droppers, did you say?
The Mary Wallopers.
Mary Wallopers. I'm glad I asked.
it's named after a boat that was from the little port that they came from. There was the Mary Walloper.
And the track again, what's the name of the track?
The Frost Is Over.
Lovely. And now a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you, Turla Convery, Irish actor, until you tell us.
So I was trying to really think of this, and then it kind of came to me, and I've been trying to slightly hide it. So my friends and my family, but not very many other people, know that I'm heavily dyslexic.
Oh,
so I really, really struggle with reading. Writing's not too bad, but reading I really, really struggle with. It takes me a long time. But again, for some odd quirk of my brain, plays and learning lines have never been a problem.
Wow! It's just, yes,
it's novels. I really struggle to read fiction.
Yes,
and I asked psychologists about this and people who study the brain, like what is the reason behind specifically fiction? Because I can read and I love reading, but I read mostly nonfiction.
Yeah.
So the book I've just finished now is Say Nothing by Patrick Braddon Keefe, which is a brilliant, brilliant book if you haven't read it, all about Northern Irish history. Anything by like John Ronson. I'm a big fan of John Ronson stuff. But obviously they're all factual.
Yes.
But for some reason, I can do factual, I think, because I can pick it up and put it down.
But I love the happy twist of irony that you can do storytelling, which is often fiction, when you pick up a play.
So whenever I asked psychotherapists about this and such, they postulate that a big part of the understanding of how to read is three different things. I can't remember all of them, but it's essentially recognizing words, it's understanding what those words are, and then putting meaning into those words
and attaching pictures. So it's thinking in pictures.
Yeah, yes. and so I just don't have one of them. I can understand and I can imagine those worlds, and I can imagine and I can make the I can emote very well.
Yes,
but I can't read very well, and so it would always get me in trouble at school because. And it was only until they discovered that I was dyslexic, because the teachers would just think I was taking the piss, because I would be making up sentences. Mm. I'd be reading something and I would stick in words that aren't there. And I would just make up a different part of the sentence. But I'd be saying it so confidently that they'd be going, well, he's clearly very confident, and he's just wanting to make everyone laugh. But I would be going, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm obviously putting across a very confident thing.
Yes.
Because you said, this is Alice in Wonderland, this is the Cheshire Cat speaking. I can go, yeah, I know what the Cheshire Cat is. The one with the big smile. Okay, yeah, okay. I mean, I'd be reading it, I'd be going, you're putting in words here, there, and everywhere. Say what's on the page. And I'd be going, I am saying what's on the page. So yes, so yeah.
And that means you'll also be a great improviser, I don't doubt. And in Bristol, I run Instant Wit, the comedy improvisation company. And that's an ability to be able to riff on a theme, isn't it? Which is very powerful, particularly for devising in theatre as well, as I know you know. And I'm sure you're a rich asset to a company for that type of approach too.
I think it helps me a lot, I think, in a way.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We have shaken your tree gloriously. Thanks for that. And now we stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. And next, we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. So when you're at purpose and in flow, Turla Convery, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
I am happiest acting. I am happiest acting. I've had the opportunity to do that as much as I have. And do it in productions with great actors. But there's very few times that I am as fulfilled as whenever I have finished a day on set. And I feel like the work that I've put in running up to it, the preparation, if it's paid off and that day has been seized and we've got the scene and I've been very happy with it and happy with what I've done, that is whenever I feel most fulfilled in my work life. In my personal life, whenever I'm most fulfilled is, quite honestly, yesterday I went for a lovely walk with my partner in Leawoods. Again, we drove over there. And then we came back and we had Pims in the garden and tried to name as many countries whilst watching the Olympics. And that is also... whenever I'm at my most happiest and feeling most fulfilled in this world. So it's kind of if and when those two can link, it feels wonderful.
The wonderful capacity to work hard and play hard sounds fantastic and makes complete sense. Love that. And now I'm going to award you with a cake, Turla. So do you like cake, first of all?
I do like cake.
And what cake would you like? Tragically, well, I live close enough to deliver a cake. I know that. But what type of cake would you like?
Don't promise me anything. Do you know what? I will go for a lemon drizzle cake.
Oh, nice. That could be possible. Drizzle. Maybe I'll come around your house for the cake.
We had at our wedding, we were very, very fortunate. Frankie's nana paid for our cake. She wasn't able to attend the wedding, but she really, really, really wanted to pay for the cake. And we kept saying, but we really, really, really want to use that money to pay for all the rest of the stuff. And we're not that bothered by cake. But no, we really, really, really had to have a nice cake. And so we ended up getting three tiers. We had a regular birthday kind of style cake, because that's what we love. We had the chocolate fudge cake, because Frankie loves that. And I love that as well. But then we both... but I absolutely love lemon drizzle.
I like the fact you liked all three layers. So nom, nom, nom through the three layers. Yeah.
It was quite an easy decision.
So now you get to put a cherry on the cake, which is the whole reason I'm wibbling on about cake. And this is stuff now, like, what's a favourite inspirational quote, Turla, that's always given you sucker and pulled you towards your future?
So I don't know if it's necessarily inspirational, but it's a quote that I use pretty much daily. Well, maybe not daily, but certainly it's used a lot. But it's, this too shall pass. That's the thing, and I only because whenever I was discussing this with Frank, so I was like, it's that, right? I use that all the time. That's the thing, and rightfully, I was pointed to make sure and check that it was not said by someone terrible.
It's biblical or stoic, isn't it, in its derivation? Yes.
It's apparently a King Solomon set out to create the best, the most complete sentence ever, which is not "this too shall pass." That's a derivation of what it originally was, which it originally was "this too shall pass, this too shall pass on." So the idea of "this too shall die as well."
He needed a good editor, is what we're saying.
Yeah, exactly. That's the absolute certainty of that sentence. But yes, "this too shall pass" always helps me whenever I'm feeling overwhelmed, but also whenever I'm feeling overly elated. Yes. And that helps me stay in the present. You know, if I'm feeling overly, "oh my God, this is amazing," going, "okay, this too shall pass, this feeling, so I have to understand it and be in it here and be right now, because this will pass. This is not going to stay forever. I'm not going to live my life at this peak. There's going to be troughs, so you have to live with that and allow that to live within you."
Boom. What notes, help, or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself?
Try to learn at an early enough stage that comparisons don't bring you anywhere. They're only designed to hold you back. That'll probably be... And he would say, you know, "F off." And I would go, "but please listen to me, because I'm your older self. It would be really helpful if you figured this out now, because I have to live with it now. And please figure it out." That's probably what...
Lovely. Lovely. So now we're ramping up shortly for the final bit, which is about Shakespeare and legacy. But just before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. So now you've experienced this from within, and thank you sincerely for saying yes. It's been a delight and a joy. But who would you most like to pass the golden baton along to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
Oh, very good. Do you know what? He's an old friend of mine who I met on Paul Dark. He's a guy called Tom York, and not of Radiohead. I would love to say that I knew the guy, Tom York of Radiohead. But Tom York is a wonderful, wonderful actor and a very, very interesting man. And he's just set off on a new journey into audio erotica, where he has developed this huge big fan base, where he reads erotic fiction.
Lovely. So that's fascinating and intriguing. And of course, I don't think of this show being autoerotica, but you never know. We could be browsing millions of people as we spout. That's a great answer. So Tom York, your mission, should you just accept it, is to furnish me with a warm introduction. Thank you very much indeed. And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the world's prestige and all the merely players, we're going to talk about legacy now, Turla. When all is said and done, how would you most like to be remembered?
I'd most like to be remembered by the people I love as a warm, friendly, and kind person that they could turn to whenever they needed to. I struggle with huge beliefs. I come from a very, very religious family, and they are still very religious, and that's wonderful. Their faith is very beautiful and very deep to them.
Presumption, that's the Catholic side of the divide rather than the Protestant side.
Yes. So my grandma was a hugely, hugely devout Catholic. My mum and dad are extremely true and deep in their faith. I've struggled with it in my own life, but the one thing that helps me think is that the way in which I remember people is the way in which I think they live on. It's the way in which you make a cup of tea a specific way, because that's how grandma made it. That's how that person lives on. So hilariously, thinking about Shakespeare, my grandma learnt by rote at a very, very young age, because she had to perform it on stage, and she hated performing. She hated the spotlight, but she had to learn "a pound of flesh" from Merchant of Venice, like "a pound of flesh droppeth from the place above," and blah, 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 and "drop of mercy." Yeah. And she would perform that at our little gatherings, at our little family gatherings. And so anytime I hear the Merchant of Venice mentioned, I think of my grandma. And I think that's how That's how, in my mind, a person lives on beyond their time, is in how they have interacted with you. And I hope to interact with enough people that they make terrible cups of tea like I do.
Lovely. And I'm just going to go... to preserve your legacy. Where can we find out all about Turla Convery on the old internet, please?
Type in my name.
Just spell it for those that are listening.
Yes, spell it. It's Turlough, C-O-N for November, V for Victor, E-R-Y.
Lovely, jubbly, E-R-Y.
You can tell that's how I've had to do it with my accent for many years.
What a delicious accent you have, sir. As this has been your moment in the sunshine, Turla Convery of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, just thank you very much. I look forward to playing you in tennis.
Boom, the Wimbledon champion. To be guarded. So thank you very much indeed for watching too. If you'd like to be in the show too, get in touch, care of the new website, which is thegoodlistening2show.com. And this has been Turla Convery. What an awesome pants he is, and good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at thegoodlistening2show.com website. If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, please do so. And if you'd like to have some coaching with me, care of my Personal Impact Game Changer program, then you can contact me and also about the show at chris@secondcurve.uk. On X and Instagram, it's @thatchrisgrimes. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.